Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. As promised, Mark Brumley with us this hour for more open forum and your calls welcome. 888-318-7884. Not really one to go immediately to the conspiracy theories, but I'm pretty sure that Edgar sabotaged the studio. I'm pretty sure that it was a conspiracy because Edgar got to come in here and I was away and he hosted beautifully while I was gone. And now the studio doesn't work. It's just broke. The studio is broken. And so, again, I'm not really into conspiracies, but I'm not going to look away when the obvious is staring me right in the face. But I think we got the studio working this hour, so we got a good hour in front of us, at least we hope. And if you'd like to get in on it with your question about the Catholic faith, the Catholic Church, about the Bible, about the sacraments, about the person of Jesus, about the moral life, it's all welcome, 888-318-7884. And you do not have to be a Catholic to call. 888-318-7884. Our guest is Mark Brumley, the president of Ignatius Press, which is known, its reputation everywhere is that it's the most important publisher in the Alpha Quadrant. Mark Brumley, thank you for being with us.
Yeah, the people in the Beta Quadrant know that, and they're envious.
Oh, they're not just envious. I think they're scared. I think they see you coming. I think they see you gunning for Beta Quadrant superiority as well, and they're nervous about it.
So we've got a whole line of books translated into Klingon, and that's really, it's got them worried.
I bet there probably are. You know, Mark, I believe you are jesting that you have your Catholic books in Klingon, but I will bet you that there are books in Klingon. Like, you could probably order and read.
There are. Yeah.
Like Wuthering Heights in Klingon or something.
Are you implying that there's something highly unusual about Klingon as a language, that it would be perhaps a novelty to have a book in that noble language?
Yes, generally speaking, when a language is named after a people, that people exists. So that's like the English language.
You are asserting here on international radio that Klingons don't exist.
I feel fairly confident making that taking that position. I feel fairly confident in it. But I don't know if you've ever read Shakespeare in the original Klingon. But it's nothing can compare to it.
Of course, that's what they say. And normally, when we speak of something being in the original, whatever language you want to insert there, the implication is it was written in that language and it's been translated. But that use either confuses the facts, namely that Shakespeare wasn't originally written in Klingon, or its meaning to suggest that there are subsequent translations of Shakespeare, and that the one that you want to get is the original translation of Shakespeare from English to Klingon.
Man.
But I'm not really clear what was intended by that, other than a put down for non-Klingons.
Yeah, of course, that's a line uttered by the great Christopher Plummer, playing a Klingon general.
Rest in peace.
888-318-7884 is the number. I'm going to tell you right now, Mark, how many of our lines are full. All but one line full right now. All but one line full. So I believe it is time for us to put you to work. And I do apologize for the technical problems that we have recently encountered, but perhaps all of that is over now. Kelsey's here in California with us somewhere, watching on YouTube. Kelsey, we're awful glad you're here. Go ahead with your question for Mark.
Hi, thanks. Yeah, I have a bit of a random question, and the context is that my boyfriend, who's Catholic, is a glassblower, and he sells some of his stuff on Etsy. And someone asked him today if he could make a custom pendant that has cremation ashes in it. So I know that Catholic custom is to bury the ashes, so we wanted to know, first, why is that? Second, is that a tradition or a law? And third, since he'd be making this presumably for someone who's non-Catholic, would that change anything?
Kelsey, before Mark answers, you just want to clarify two things. One, he's a Catholic glassblower. That's right?
Yeah, so he's Catholic.
And can I look at his website while Mark's answering your questions? What's his website? I got to see that he's Catholic.
His Etsy is Sierra Glass Art, S-I-E-R-R-A.
Okay.
So just like Etsy.com/Sierra Glass Art.
Okay, I'll be looking at that. Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, so the human remains, whether you're talking about the burying of the body or we're talking about cremation, human remains need to be treated with a certain respect because they are the remains of human beings, and we see these remains as tied to the person who has passed on, and looking forward to the resurrection of that person from the dead. Not that God somehow has to figure out a way to go out and get all those remains and reassemble them. We'll leave that to God, but the ashes themselves can represent, just as the corpse of a deceased person represents the physicality, the materiality of the person that not only has been the case in the past during the person's earthly life, but looks forward to what's going to happen for that person in the resurrection from the dead. So that's the first point. Second point, and so consequently, the remains, whether we're talking about a body or ashes, need to be handled and preserved with care, which is why the Catholic Church doesn't support scattering ashes. So the people that do that have a worthy intention. The way that they are treating the ashes doesn't fully express the dignity that is associated with human remains. So that's part of it. And usually they're kept in an urn or some kind of sacred container when we're talking about ashes. And they're, to be put in a sacred place. So there are places set aside for the collection of people's remains, not just their bodies, but also their ashes. So that's really how Catholics believe the body of deceased people should be taken care of. We recognize that not everybody agrees with that. And so then it can be a question of, am I doing something that's different from what I think as a Catholic, or am I doing something that I think as a Catholic everybody should observe? And I would say, as a Catholic, we think everybody should observe proper care for people's remains, and these behaviors that I described before as a problem aren't completely in keeping with that. So that said, I don't think there's a problem. I think that, at least I should say, I'm not aware of any requirement of the Church that would say you could not have, a secure, solid glass urn or container for deceased loved one's ashes. I'm not aware of anything that would restrict that.
Does that work for you?
Yeah, that's very helpful. Thank you so much.
I really like the glass art, too. It's really good.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, it's a new store, but he does really cool stuff.
For a small fee, he could be official glass artist of Catholic Answers, just in case we want to get into some.
Oh, he would love that.
Yeah. Do not go with official glass artist of Ignatius.com, though. You're going to want to go with us. All right. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. More Open Forum. Mark Brumley right after this on Catholic Answers Live.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
Do you have a question but prefer to ask it privately? Catholic Questions can help. Go to CatholicQuestions.com to ask your question online, email us, drop us a letter, or give us a call. Longtime Catholic Answers Live apologist and author Jim Blackburn or another Catholic Questions apologist will be happy to assist you. Catholic Questions proudly supports Catholic Answers Live, so visit us at CatholicQuestions.com today. That's CatholicQuestions.com.
The destination for great Catholic audio programming is EWTN Podcast Central, featuring the best of EWTN radio, as well as faith-filled podcasts from our friends and affiliates across the nation, all in one place, all free. If it's central to the faith, you can find it on EWTN Podcast Central. It's like podcast heaven. Visit EWTN.com/radio/podcasts today.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host. I believe we're working on having an official glass blower for Catholic Answers Live, so that will be a real addition to the family here. I want to invite you to the conference, the Catholic Answers Conference, is coming up September 21st through the 24th right here in sunny San Diego. Perfect time to be in San Diego. Maybe your mom wants to come. Maybe you want to give it to her as a Mother's Day gift. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com. Dr. Scott Hahn's going to be there. Our keynote address will be given by Sister Regina Marie Gorman. Dale Ahlquist is going to be there talking about, who do you think? Yeah, that's right. Chesterton, Dr. Francis Beckwith, Dr. Logan Gage, all of the Catholic Answers apologists will be speaking. We'll be doing the radio show and we'll be having fun. We're definitely going to have fun. So visit CatholicAnswersConference.com. What's the conference about? I Believe in God. Our theme is I Believe in God this year. CatholicAnswersConference.com. Mark Brumley is our guest. He's the president. I always want to say publisher, but that is not correct. He is the president of Ignatius Press, which really is a wonderful press, and you should check it out at ignatius.com. When we started, Mark, I didn't ask you if there was any books that you wanted to talk about, but I don't know if you want to mention that fantastic catechetics program you've got, but anything that you wanted to tell us about coming out of Ignatius Press?
Program I think you're talking about is the Word of Life program that we're doing with the Augustine Institute, a K through 8 series, and we've done K through 5. They're working on 6 through 8. But I wanted to mention something that is more apologetic in nature. Sometimes I will talk to Protestants and they will say, you know, I'd like to read what they call the Apocrypha, you know, which is for Protestants, it refers to what we Catholics call the deuterocanonical books, seven books of the Old Testament that are in our Bibles that aren't in Protestant Bibles typically. And so they say, oh, you know, I don't want to have to go out and buy a Catholic Bible, you know, because I just want the extra books. And I have recommended there's a little RSB translation of the Apocrypha, as it's called. But I want to mention something that we've come out with at Ignatius Press. Here it is. I'm holding it up for the people watching on radio. You can't see it. All you can see is your radio. But it's a copy of the first and second book of Maccabees, our Ignatius Catholic Study Bible volume. So all the non-Catholics or Protestants out there, I should say, who are interested in reading one of these mysterious books, I get it that you don't think it's divinely inspired. But you might be curious about it and say, hey, what's all the controversy about? I'm going to encourage you to get a copy of First and Second Maccabees, Ignatius Catholic Study Bible. And this is comes with not just the text, what we would call the biblical text of First and Second Maccabees, but also with introduction, commentary, and notes by Matthew and Leanne Thomas and Scott Hahn and Curtis Mitch. Plus, it also has wonderful study questions by Deacon Dennis Walters, PhD. So you can become familiar with 1 and 2 Maccabees. You hear about that, you Protestants out there, when you talk to Catholics, and you can see what's in the books and get some good Catholic commentary, and maybe, just maybe, you might reconsider the question of whether or not at least 1 and 2 Maccabees should be in the Old Testament. The Catholics and the Orthodox think so.
Very, very cool. All right, Ignatius.com is where you can go, Ignatius.com, and check it out. Mark Brumley, our guest, Eric in Portland is next, Portland, Oregon, listening on 88.3 FM. Eric, thank you for waiting. Go ahead with your question for Mark Brumley.
Yes, hello. Thank you for being here, and thank you for putting on this great program.
Thank you, Eric.
Greetings from Portland. Yeah, and I have a question about the human nature of Jesus, and it has to do with essentially genetics, right? So I assume the church doesn't have an official position on what the genetics of Jesus is, but I guess the question might be if Jesus had a DNA test, do you think that the DNA would demonstrate that Mary was his mother? Would you be surprised,
yes,
or would your faith be challenged in any way if you found that Joseph from the DNA was his father?
That wouldn't surprise me. I think that, I would expect it to be Mary's DNA. But if somehow God miraculously included St. Joseph's DNA in there, I wouldn't. I mean, the whole business of being conceived without a human father is miraculous. So I wouldn't shake my faith if somehow God had managed to give Jesus Joseph's DNA as well. But it would be unusual. I mean, you would suppose, because Jesus is really a human being, the divine person with the human nature, you would suppose that he would have the genetic background of his parent, which would be Mary in this case. So that would be what I would expect. I wouldn't expect to see St. Joseph there, but as I say, that in itself wouldn't shake my faith.
Eric?
It makes sense. Wouldn't shake your faith either way.
Yeah.
It would take more than that.
That's right.
Well, no matter, I guess no matter what, it's a miracle. Like whether God created an entirely new set of male DNA or did something or used Joseph's, one way or another, it's miraculous.
Right. Yeah. Amen. Thank you.
Man, Eric, thanks for that call from Portland. That, you know what? That was a very Portland question. I don't actually know what that means, but that was a very Portland question. Thanks, Eric. Mark Brumley, our guest. It's Open Forum. Kyle is in Melbourne, Florida, listening on 920 AM down on the Space Coast. Kyle, welcome. Go ahead with your question for Mark Brumley.
Oh, hey, sorry. So you can hear me?
I can hear you. Are you? Yeah.
Oh, yes. Sorry, it's just there wasn't really much of a transition from like the actual radio show playing over like the waiting line to the call, so I wasn't sure. But well, first of all, thank you for taking my call. So I guess a brief synopsis of the question that I have. So I have a very good friend of mine who him and I kind of do like the human sin with our conversations. We talk about things no good friends should talk about, like politics and religion. So, well, he is not what I would call religious in any way, but he's very, very smart. I mean, I think he has read the entire Bible cover to cover probably 3 or 4 times, which is more than I can say. So him and I were having a discussion the other day, and he brought up a question that I actually didn't have an answer for. So basically his question was, if God knows everything that you will ever do before you're even born, how could he allow someone to be born that is a thoroughbred atheist throughout their whole life and will never accept the gift of Christ in their life for them to just go to hell? Like, basically, his whole thing is, why would God allow that to happen? And I truthfully didn't have an answer for him.
All right, Mark, why would God allow that?
Well, God allows lots of things. So the question isn't restricted, by the way, to atheists. You can expand it, make it more difficult. Why would God allow people to come into being he knows who are ultimately going to be damned? And that's not a list that's necessarily limited to atheists. People can wind up damned for reasons other than being atheists, right? And I'd say the answer to that is I don't know, except I do know that the existence of any person, anybody who comes to be, is a good thing, and that person can contribute to the good, including the saving good of other people, whether intentionally or unintentionally. So atheists, I mean, I think, obviously, I don't want atheists to die remaining atheists, nor do I want anybody to die in a state of ultimate alienation from God. But even if people do that, if they choose something at odds with their God-intended destiny for the human race, they still nevertheless can contribute to the good of other people. Other people could be praying for them. They can. I know of many, actually quite a few people who came to faith being raised by atheist parents who were good parents. They raised their kids well. The raising of their kids in the way they did contributed to those kids later on becoming Christians in some instances and Catholic Christians in other instances. So I think there are things that people contribute to the well-being of other human beings, including the salvation of other human beings, wittingly or unwittingly, even if those people ultimately choose to reject God or choose to value something ahead of God and don't spend eternity with Him. That's what I would say. We all have a role to play.
Well, sure, but you know, I basically kind of gave an answer similar to that. But his whole gotcha thing afterward was, well, basically his whole argument behind that was, what is God's plan with that? Because even I said, like, you know, I brought up a good example. I'm sure you're unfortunately very familiar with the quote comedian George Carlin. Watching a lot of his random religious garbage that he spewed actually made me look into the Christian faith. Just because he was so opposite of it. So, you know, and I brought that up too, that like, hey, you know, there's a possibility that just in their actions, or maybe if they're some kind of like real, you know, good doer, that maybe they could bring someone else to the faith. But, you know, basically his ultimate question is, well, why would God allow someone to be born that's ultimately going to be damned and basically suffer for eternity? That was more the blunt question. I was like, I don't know, man.
Yeah, so it's really, why does God bring people into existence he knows are going to freely choose to reject him? Let's be explicit that nobody is brought into the world and then just happens to wind up damned. Anybody who comes into existence being given grace and the opportunity to be saved. Now, so if they're not saved, it's not because God didn't give them what they needed to be saved. But nevertheless, God knows that there are going to be some people, you know, so we can posit, God knows that, you know, Fred, even though he's going to be given graces and so on, in the end, he's still going to reject God and not be saved, okay? So why does God bring that person into existence? Because the existence of that person is still good, and he still can contribute to the good of the world and the salvation of others. So I used to kind of think that this was more of a problem, but I just don't see it as a problem. People who wind up at enmity with God for all eternity do so because they've chosen to love self over God, but they still have played a role in the good of other people. So it would seem to me that God, being wise and loving, can wisely choose to bring people into existence who will nevertheless freely choose to love themselves above him and therefore not be in communion with him in eternity, because those people are also going to contribute to the good of other people. So it may be that your friend and I just fundamentally assess that outcome differently, but for me, that it's horrible that somebody chooses the love of self above God and therefore is deprived of communion with ultimate good and so on, but I can see why a wise and loving God would nevertheless bring someone into existence who's going to choose that, because there's a certain goodness inherent in the choice, the freedom to choose, even if it's to choose a horrible thing. But in addition to that, we don't exist simply for ourselves. We exist for the well-being of other people. And you know, it may be that this atheist is going to have a child, and that child is going to be a great saint. If that atheist didn't exist, that great saint wouldn't have existed. So it's mysterious, but I don't think it's so mysterious that it's not a plausible, there's not a plausible account for why God would do that.
Kyle, thank you very, very much for the call. Mark, I have to say I really appreciate your answer, because I often hear people trying to answer this question in a purely individualistic way, and that won't work, because we are not purely individualistic.
Right.
We're social creatures. We're part of a social network, and even a person who does great evil in their life, and maybe doesn't come to redemption, may do many things that still are for the good of the whole of humanity, or for another person, maybe even their own child.
That's right. That's right. That's right. And this is very mysterious, and we could devote a whole show to talking about facets of that. But the fact is, if Adam and Eve hadn't sinned, you wouldn't exist and I wouldn't exist.
Yeah.
Let's just let that sink in.
I don't like the part about me not existing. I can't really get past that. All right, we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back. Kyle, thanks very much. Appreciate that call and that wonderful conversation. Right back with more Open Forum with Mark Brumley on Catholic Answers Live. This year, the Catholic Answers Conference turns its attention to the question of God in an age of unbelief. Join us September 21st through 24th in San Diego for I Believe in God, featuring very special guest Scott Hahn and an all-star lineup of speakers. Spend four fun days with your favorite Catholic Answers apologists. Seats are still available, but going fast. Use promo code EARLY to save $50 and register today at CatholicAnswersConference.com.
In These 12, The Gospel Through the Apostles' Eyes, best-selling author Rod Bennett gives a riveting re-examination of gospel events from the ground floor perspective of Christ's own hand-picked successors. In his trademark storytelling style, Bennett movingly depicts what it was like for the apostles to witness Jesus' teaching and miracles up close. Why did he call them, and what did he intend for them to do? Order your copy of These 12 today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Want to know more about the origins of the Catholic Church? Joe Heschmeyer explores the beginnings of Christianity. In the early church was the Catholic Church. Joe digs deep into the words and actions of those who lived right after the apostles to refute anti-Catholic claims of how the faith was lived back then. Order your copy of The Early Church Was the Catholic Church today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
If you're not a Bible scholar, the full message of how the Sunday Mass readings fit together can be tough to comprehend. Apologist Carlo Broussard is here to help. Join Carlo every Friday for the Sunday Catholic Word Podcast. In each episode, he unpacks the scripture readings for that Sunday and brings them all together so you can better understand and defend the faith. Visit SundayCatholicWord.com to subscribe. That's SundayCatholicWord.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Our guest this hour, Mark Brumley. It is Open Forum. That is the groovy music. And you are welcome to call 888-318-7884. Mark upset me just before we went to the break, and I need to deal with this emotional wound that he has given me. If Adam and Eve had not sinned, you said, you and I would not exist. Is it just you and me, or are there other people that would not exist as well? This is very upsetting
absolutely.
News to me.
Absolutely, because when you stop and think about the history of the human race, the first human beings, okay, I'm not going to get into the question of literal interpretation of Genesis and all that, just say the first human beings, if sin had not entered into the world, then people would have made different choices throughout history. Part of sin is making a choice. And so you think about all the war, all of the suffering, the sickness, the disease, the murder, rape, pillaging, all those things are functions of sin. And all those things affect the genetic outcome. Like, who was your great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather? Might have been some other person might have had, relations with your great-great-great-great-grandmother, but that person didn't because he went to war and got killed, you know.
Oh.
That's a very simplistic example, but you take the whole of the human family,
right,
and you play it back without sin in it, and the genetic reality that is part of you. You're not reducible to your genetic reality. Obviously,
No, but I can't be extracted from it either.
That's exactly right.
I'm not different from it.
That's right.
Yeah.
Nor can you be extracted from history, and nor can your ancestors. And all those things shape the choices that we face and therefore the people we become, even under grace.
I am glad God has a plan, because it is mind-boggling to think about all that.
That's right.
All right. Well, I almost want to say, oh, happy fault, you know, when I think about that.
Yeah. Well, there's a facet of that saying that is expressing this reality. So nowadays we know a lot more about genetics, and therefore we have to think more deeply. But the ancients understood history and the role of history and choice and freedom and sin and all of that as well. So it's a little more complicated today, but ultimately it still points back to the greatness of divine providence and God's working out with freedom, you know, infinite freedom of God with finite, limited, fallen, but nevertheless real freedom of human beings to make things happen, who and what we are.
I'm excited about the next call, because underneath this shirt that you see here, Mark, I am wearing my Iowa State Cyclones shirt. And this is George from Iowa watching on YouTube. I don't know if he's an Iowa a Hawks or a Cyclones guy, but George, you with us? Oh, so what is it? Hawks or Cyclones? I'm wearing my Iowa State shirt. I got my Iowa State shirt on right here. The Cyclones. Do you know what the name of their mascot is? The Cyclones?
Cy?
That is right.
I forget.
That's why I wear my Iowa State shirt. All right, go ahead with your question for Mark.
Yeah. Well, I thought your last call and answer was interesting. This might inform your answer to this next question, but it's something, it's a very broad question. It's, what kind of country do you want to live in? A society that respects believers in the Catholic faith, but also allows respect and freedom of people who don't believe the same way that you do. For example, Texas schools are now going to, public schools are now going to display the Ten Commandments, and that may seem innocuous. I don't know how cluttered the walls of a Texas classroom are. Adding the Ten Commandments might not eliminate something else, but things are constantly changing. Societies constantly change, and I see a lot more extremism coming from religious politicians. Mike Huckabee told a joke 10 years ago. I wrote it off as a joke. He'd like to see school kids taught the Bible at gunpoint. And, well, let's say that was a joke 10 years ago. Well, where are we going to be in 2 years? Is Montana going to outlaw the teaching of evolution in public schools because they're giving themselves the power to do things like that? And I don't think that people who are atheists should simply exist as instruments to better the existence of believers and Christians. Don't you agree?
No, I think atheists should become believers. But they don't. If they don't, they don't. But I'm not saying anybody should force them, but I think it's good for atheists to do good things in the world.
Okay, but is being an atheist evil in and of itself?
And it can be. I mean, it's wrong. It's a mistaken view of of what existence is all about. Sure, in that sense.
Well, I thought I'd help you out, because just because someone is an atheist, it doesn't mean that it's the love of themselves that they've prioritized over love of God.
You have an opinion there, and maybe you're helping me out by expressing your opinion. Maybe I'm helping you out by countering your opinion. I believe that ultimately we are faced with rightly ordering our lives, and that God is the origin of our life and he's the fulfillment of our life. And that if when we come before God, we make any other choice other than to order ourselves towards God, then I think that's a selfish choice. It's a choice to value our will about what we're going to choose above the source of meaning and existence and goodness and all of that. That's what I would believe. So that's why I said what I said. But that doesn't mean in this life, you know, prior to that atheist facing that choice, that atheists are bereft of God's grace, or that they're not able to do good, or that we should do bad things to them. So just because I think somebody holds a mistaken view, I mean, you obviously think that the view I'm articulating is mistaken. Are you going to say I'm evil because of that?
No, it's right. Simply based on your previous answer. It's good that you hold more nuanced views of all the many atheists that are out there besides just someone hypothetically who might do it out of pure narcissism, which was one example that you used. So
yeah, and it was and that example was given in a context, and you've given me the opportunity to further explain the context. But the context was there earlier too.
So George, did
seeing
you?
As,
oh, go ahead. Go ahead, George. Didn't want to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Well, seeing as we still live in a world where we still debate these questions, and you say, well, God is the truth, and God is the origin of our lives and such.
Sure.
Well, we are still able to ask questions and interrogate those claims. And
sure.
It is possible that the truth includes the Catholic Church being incorrect and their apologists being incorrect.
Sure, absolutely.
And that would fall under the truth. And if we respect the truth,
right,
well, then our lives might end up being a situation where we live with an uncomfortable uncertainty. But that
sure.
doesn't mean that we have given up. We have not.
Right.
We have actually
nobody.
Not,
no one here. At least I'm not saying that. I have not heard Cy say that. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure where the comment is going.
Well, do you think that in 2 years you might hold more, I don't know, supremacist positions over secular institutions that
you talk about me personally?
Do you mean Mark, or do you mean Catholics in general, or because let me just get go ahead.
Mark,
I want you to George. George,
we don't want to gang up on you here.
No, I don't want to gang up, George.
You're making pretty strong assertions, so that's why we're kind of pushing back with strength. But please go ahead.
Do you have a question? That's just all I want you to get to, George. Because I'll come back to you. I just want Mark to have something. It does seem like you called with a particular question you wanted to ask him, and I don't feel like we've gotten to it yet.
Yeah, so public schools in Texas, like I said, they're going to display the Ten Commandments. And we can say that we can, using words and persuasion, we can make anything seem reasonable. And we can say, well, we're being perfectly reasonable here. We're not being authoritarian in any way. And you may say what I've heard before as well, separation of church and state isn't in the Constitution, for instance. Well
those words aren't in the Constitution, but obviously there's a distinction between religious organizations and civil government. Sure, yeah, that's there.
So,
I don't have any objection calling that the separation of church and state.
So, Mark, the underlying question then is that I'm understanding from what George just said there at the end is, what kind of government do you want? One that is essentially a Christian government or a secular government?
I believe that the best form of government is a government which is not run by the church. It's run by the citizens of a country, respecting the rights of every citizen of that country. There's a certain sense in which you can refer to that as secular. It's possible that you could have a, you know, overwhelming majority of people that of a particular country have a particular religious affiliation, and therefore as part of the cultural heritage of that nation, certain facets of the country could honor that religious tradition. But I think that teaching of the Second Vatican Council, certainly the teaching of John Paul II, Benedict XVI, is that even in situations like that, all the rights of all of the people, all the citizens, have to be respected. So in that sense, I think that's a secular form of government. It's not, it doesn't purport to be directly authorized by God or authorized by any particular religious authority, but represent, but is an expression of the will of the people. And that's what I think is the most just form of government.
George?
All right. Thank you for that. Thanks for your answer. I was going to just name drop as an example, Lauren Boebert, but I know that you're not that person. You're not, you would say you disagree with them. And that was just one could be an example. That I do appreciate your answer.
Sure.
If I could say, if I may, Mark, I don't know if George is aware of this, but this is actually a fairly strong debate among Catholics right now.
Right.
And Mark's publishing company, Ignatius Press, has
people on both sides of that argument.
Yeah, you. But I'm thinking of the On Trial book. What's the name of the book On Trial?
Oh, America on Trial.
America on Trial is right. One view of that. There are others, but this is a quite hotly debated topic, and in which Catholics are expending a lot of ink. So your call and question on that is very welcome, and follow-ups are very welcome as well, because this is an issue at controversy among Catholics. Mark, did you want to say anything?
Yeah, and I'd say, George, appreciate it. I hope I didn't get, you know, too aggressive with you there. You know, on things like the Ten Commandments in public schools, I'll just tell you my view. I look at the Ten Commandments as ethical contributions to the history of the country. And I think that one way we honor the ethnic, religio-cultural traditions of people is by things like that. They're emblems of our ethical heritage. As a Christian, I look at those commandments differently than, say, a secular person who might, except for the first three, and even there, a secular person might say, well, I see some ethical value in those first three commandments. Someone might say, I affirm all the rest of these things as ethically good. And that person might be an atheist and might say, I don't think there's a God. I don't think these things came from a God. But I see, I appreciate the value, their ethical contribution to the emergence of our culture and our civilization. So therefore, that's a reason I might want them to be honored and affirmed, you know, in a public school setting. I'm looking at that. I'm going to say, well, that's all true. But for me, they're more than that. So we could actually agree. It's possible that an atheist and a Christian, or an atheist and a Jew, or an atheist and a Muslim, or some combination of those, or agnostics brought into the mix, could say, well, we look at these things differently, but we nevertheless acknowledge that they are part of this culture and this heritage, including the political heritage of the country. And therefore, we're going to honor them with people taking different views of what the full significance of why these things should be honored is.
I'm going to leave it there because I'm late for the break. I do have to apologize for saying Hawks. I meant Hawkeyes when I said Iowa. All right, we'll be right back.
Hang on. Catholic Answers Live will return in a moment.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Do you love sharing the gospel and want to learn to be more effective? Join the St. Paul Street Evangelization Online School of Evangelization. You will learn to build bridges of trust and make disciples by befriending strangers, proclaiming the gospel, inviting people to the church, and praying with others. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you are unable to give, we'll give you a membership at no cost. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Save the date. Saturday, August 26th is the day, and Birmingham, Alabama is the place for the 2023 EWTN Family Celebration. We're celebrating Mother Angelica's love for the Eucharist, and join us to mark the centennial year of Mother's birth. Make your plans now to attend this free event. More details coming soon at our Family Celebration webpage, ewtn.com/familycelebration.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I always really enjoy a conversation like that with George because I do think you'll have to tell me if you think I'm wrong, but I think his question was quite sincere. What kind of government are we advocating for? And I'm just so glad we get to have that conversation. I always say we really do want non-Catholics and non-Christians, non-believers to call because those are great conversations to have. And I don't know anywhere where they're consistently being had in this society. You're not getting that on CNN. You know, you're not getting it on the home shopping network or any. Where are you going to get these? And we need to have those conversations. So I'm very grateful to George.
And as I said in the break, I didn't want George to feel like we were putting him on a spot. You know, because he's obviously the odd man out between the two of us here, and we were articulating a pretty firm.
Yeah.
Position.
So. Well, we share the same view, you and I. I mean, on a personal level, I like George better than you. So, I mean, in that sense, I was on his side.
Yeah.
But,
well, I like him better than you because he's from Iowa.
Why didn't you correct me when I said Hawks then? If you're so big on Iowa, I meant to say Hawkeyes, and I knew when I was saying it, it wasn't coming out right. But did you ever do that where you're saying it and you're like, this is not right?
I've given whole classes where that's happened. It's embarrassing.
Let's go to, I'm sorry. I don't know where I'm going now. Who am I going to? I'm going to Anne in New York watching on YouTube. Anne, welcome. Go ahead with your question for Mark.
Hello, good afternoon. Thank you so much for taking my call. So I'm a Catholic convert. I've converted in 2018. I've just been, these past few years, been struggling with some things with the faith, in particular the concept of an immortal soul. Mm-hmm. Looking at it from a Jewish perspective, like the traditional Hebrew view, there was really no concept of that. But then of course, I don't know, Greek philosophy sort of influenced Christianity in general, and there's this concept of an immortal soul. And so I don't know, I just feel as though I don't know if I could say it's related to other things. I don't know if I could say I agree with the concept of an immortal soul, and I know that's a really huge teaching within Catholicism because, you know, that relates to prayers to the saints and prayers to the dead and, you know, all these other things. So I guess this will be a deciding factor of whether I stay Catholic or not, but I don't know, where is the proof, especially from the scriptures, that we have an immortal soul?
Wonderful, man. Thank you.
Well, there are lots of passages in the New Testament that speak of the soul. And two things to say about that. Obviously, for the Christian, what the New Testament says is pertinent. If you want to, I could give you a biblical passage you can look at. Matthew chapter 10, verse 28, and Luke 12, 20, and Acts 2, 27, and Revelation 6, 9, and Revelation 24 as examples. And I know it's kind of hard to get all those real quickly there. And if we have time, I'll come back to them. But the point is that the focus of Christianity, as with Judaism, isn't so much the immortality of the soul as it is the resurrection of the body. So Christianity is going to assert that there's an aspect of human beings that's not reducible to the body. And we're going to call that aspect of human beings not reducible to the body the soul. One of several words that we could use, but soul is the common one. So the New Testament clearly teaches the distinction between our materiality or our bodiliness and our spirituality that has to do with our soul. I said two points in regard to that. First has to do with the fact that Christians accepting the New Testament can affirm the existence of the soul based on the New Testament. But the New Testament isn't just a Christian document. It reflects at least a mainstream element of first century Judaism. And even going back before the first century of Judaism, in this period, a couple hundred years before, when you have the Jewish encounter with Greek thought, and even before that, Jewish encounter with Persian thought, Babylonian thought, you see a back and forth so that God's revelation responds to these ideas, in some instances rejecting them, in some instances modifying them, so that throughout the whole Old Testament, over a period of time, we go from a period in which the idea of the soul is very vague to an increased clarity over time, so that by the time you get to early Christianity, within Judaism, you have Pharisees who believed in the existence of a spiritual soul. And you have, of course, you also have Sadducees who denied it. So I think you shouldn't feel that somehow Christianity is inappropriately moving beyond Judaism of that time period by affirming the existence of the soul, as if this is some kind of Greek import into Christianity, when in fact that Greek influence, and it's not just a dominance, it's actually a kind of back and forth, that Greek influence made its way into Judaism, or the religion of the Old Testament, comes Judaism later on, but religion of the Old Testament, out of which Jesus and many, many first century Jews came to affirm the existence of the soul, the spiritual dimension of human beings.
I wonder if that is helpful to you, Anne.
Yes, I guess so. But I guess like it's just like relation to like the concept of like what happens when you die as well, because like I just like read stuff from like, because in Ezekiel it also says like the soul that sinned shall die. So it's just kind of like, I understand you were talking about like, you know, yeah, Jewish and how it changed, you know, prior to Christianity. But it's just like, you have an Ecclesiastes that the living that know that they will die, but the dead know nothing. And Ecclesiastes, the soul that sinned shall die. But at the same time, feel like we're coming with the concept of like, oh, well, we have an immune system.
So, Anne, I'm going to cut you short because we're running out of time, but I'll say a couple things. The word soul is used in many different senses in Scripture, sometimes to a spiritual aspect of human beings distinct from the body. Sometimes it means the person, you know. Like, for example, when we say, you gave the example of the soul that sinneth shall perish or shall die. That just means the person that sins shall be punished with death. That's what that means. So we want to make that distinction. Sometimes when the word soul is used, it simply means the person. Sometimes it's referring to an aspect of the person that's not reducible to the body. The other thing I would say is, while it's true to say that in the Old Testament, especially looking in Ecclesiastes, places like that, the afterlife is this kind of, you know, ambiguous, what the heck's going on world. But later on in Jewish revelation, the idea of a life beyond this life is stated more overtly. And so, you know, even the doctrine of the resurrection of the body implies more than was implied by Ecclesiastes when it talked about, you know, the living know that they will die, but the dead know nothing, that kind of thing. So we have to understand that the Old Testament, like the New Testament, is there's progressive revelation that occurs. And I'm just saying part of that revelation is in dynamic conversation with and reflecting on and purifying ideas from other societies, including the ancient Greeks. And the notion of the soul.
And God bless you. We're so happy that you are in the Catholic Church. If you'd like a copy of a book we have called Why We're Catholic, it might be helpful as you continue your reading. And if we can be helpful, please call again. You can hear the music, though, so that means we've got to go. Mark Brumley has been our guest. He's the president of Ignatius Press. They've got First and Second Maccabees out in a book form with commentary. You should check it out at Ignatius.com. Mark Brumley, thank you very much. I really enjoyed the hour.
Thank you. God bless you.
That does it for us. We'll see you next time, God willing, right here, Catholic Answers Live.